active measures, disinformation and subversion. How does that affect us? Well, actually, it has affected us and it continues to. The Chechnya was the first name of the Soviet Union terror group, but we all know the KGB, or at least we know of the KGB. The KGB was the Department for Homeland Security of the Soviet Union, but originally was called the Chechnya. Now, the Chechnya was initially, that was the first name, Chechnya meant Emergency Committee, whereas KGB is short for Department of Homeland Security. That's what I was told by Russian. So, interesting, KGB is abbreviation for, in Russian, Department of Homeland Security. The Chechnya was founded on the 20th of December, 1917, by the instruction of Vladimir Lenin. And it was founded by Felix Dzerzhinsky, who was directly answerable to Leon Trotsky. Leon Trotsky was the head of the Red Army. He was Napoleon of the Animal Farm. He was the hero of the revolution, Leon Trotsky. And so under him came Felix Dzerzhinsky, who established the Chechnya. They were tasked by the Soviet Politburo with arresting, torturing, executing the many tens of thousands of dissidents and deserters and reactionaries and counter-revolutionaries, which of course included everyone from the Russian royal family right down to the daughters, the son, the family doctor, and the dog. Storming the Heavens was the title of the Soviet League of the Militant Godless. That was their title, the League of Militant Godless. This was the young people that was mobilized as sort of the scouts, so to speak, of the Soviet Union, and they were there to attack churches and loot churches. And so Godless Communists is the name of another book on atheism and study in Soviet Russia. Well, the Chechnya were known as Lenin's Sword and Shield. The first Soviet secret police were known as the Chechnya. An all-Russian extraordinary commission for combating counter-terrorism sabotage, they say. But in fact, there was no Russians amongst them. These people were anti-Russians. As Solzhenitsyn said, it is an insult to the victims to speak of the Russian Revolution. It was not a Russian Revolution. It was an anti-Russian Revolution. It was run by people who hated the Russians. And he said it is the ultimate insult to the victims to call it the Russian Revolution. Good point. And also, so often when I was growing up, we spoke about the Russians, and what we meant was the Soviets, the Bolsheviks, the Communists. And that's actually not fair, because the Russians aren't bad people. It was the Bolshevik Soviet Communist system that was evil. They used terrorism, they used torture, they used assassination, they used espionage. And they certainly had the biggest espionage network in the world. In fact, I've read The Secret War, which is a phenomenal book looking at all sides of the Second World War. From the Chinese, Japanese, German, French, British, Italian, and the Soviet. And as they said, the Soviet group actually was bigger. In fact, the Soviets put more money and had more manpower, more resources, more projects than all the other espionage departments in the whole world combined. And the British had a massive espionage network. The Americans were pretty big too. But the Soviets dwarfed them all. Well, they had special elite military units. They ran concentration camps, about 1,200 concentration camps. They were separate from the regular criminal police, and they were separate from military intelligence. They spied on everybody. They had files on virtually every person in the whole country. They answered only to the leadership of the Bolshevik Party. They machine-gunned crowds. You know, you have people upset because the police used rubber bullets or tear gas. Well, they used hard rounds. They used Vickers machine guns. They sprayed crowds. They killed hundreds of people in a single demonstration. Interesting, communists get very upset if you use a rubber bullet on them, but they were happy to use hard rounds on people who protested the Soviet Union. The Chechnya chief, Felix Dzerzhinsky, was known as Iron Felix. Very nasty piece of work. And then, of course, you had Lenin was at the top and Stalin was his sidekick. And Stalin became, if anything, even worse than Lenin. But here is Stalin and Dzerzhinsky. Body language suggests they kind of got on together. Dzerzhinsky was the ultimate spy chief. 1922, the Chechnya was renamed the NKVD, or the People's Commissariat for Internal Affairs. Doesn't that sound nice? Internal Affairs. Like Homeland Security. Public Security. Do you know who ran the French Revolution? What was the group called?
Jacobins?
Yes, that was the party behind it. But the actual group that ran it was the Committee for Public Safety. Committee for Public Safety, run by Maximilian Robespierre. A committee of six. That's actually what communism is. A Soviet is a committee. So the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics means the Union of Committee-Run Socialist Republics. When South Africa was under lockdown, lunacy, masquerade, madness, salvation by vaccination, COVID cult, we were run by a committee of six. Isn't that interesting? A Soviet. But the Rumpos informed us they consulted their ancestors. So the history of the Cheka, you can see in a procession at Red Square, May Day, Dzerzhinsky leads the pack. I mean, he's like one of the top idols of the system. And there's statues of Dzerzhinsky. There were statues of Dzerzhinsky all over the Soviet Union. Not around anymore. You have to go to the rubbish dump to find those these days. The NKVD also included border guards and spies, of course. They needed a lot of border guards. In fact, at its height, the NKVD had 3 million people employed. That's a lot of border there to protect, to keep people from fleeing from the workers' paradise. The NKVD is most notorious for running the Gulag, the forced labor camps. Gulag was the acronym for Main Administration of Corrective Labor Camps. And Russian script, Cyrillic script, that spells out to Gulag. And it's Alexander Solzhenitsyn who gave the word Gulag to the world. And these are some pictures of poor people suffering in these gulags. And this is Alexander Solzhenitsyn, his picture working in the forced labor camps. His book, how many people would have read some of the Gulag Archipelago? Well worth getting into. It's a classic. It's a separate book in Russian schools. So these are just some of them, but there's 1,200 concentration camps in the Soviet Union. We've got in our library a guidebook to the 1,200 concentration camps in the Soviet Union, which included 80 psychiatric prisons where people would be drugged and abused by medical tyrants who were working for the state. And people who'd go to a psychiatric prison, pastors, people who disagree with scientific socialism, reject evolution, things like that. So obviously they're insane because it's scientific socialism. So if you don't agree with it, there's something wrong with you medically. And so some people, they not only attacked the minister, but they disgraced him by saying he had a psychological problem, psychiatric problem. So he had to go to a lunatic asylum, padded cell, drugged him, and so on. And so those were a particular form of torture. But they didn't even have the dignity of labor. They were treated like they were insane and drugged every day and things like that. But the salt mines that we know of the Soviet Union, that meant working deep into the earth in these labor camps, Arctic hellhole, where people lost their limbs to gangrene. I had an uncle who came back from the Gulag in the Soviet Union after 10 years there, and his one hand was just a stump. It's a bit uncomfortable for a 10-year-old to meet an uncle who didn't have a hand. He was a very cheerful soul, Uncle Wolf, but he lost it while being a prisoner of the Soviets and the Gulag in Siberia for 10 years. One cannot imagine how cold it was, minus 50 degrees in some places, just the conditions beyond comprehension. And that's where they swallowed up about 60 million Russians. And there are books on this. The NKVD, of course, conducted mass extrajudicial executions like the Katyn Forest Massacre. They murdered, abused, tortured. And this is one of the worst of them. This is Nikolai Yezhov, who was the successor of Yagoda in charge of the NKVD. He presided over the Great Terror and the Purges of 1937-1938. Personally killed a large amount of people. One of Stalin's right-hand men. The chief executioner of the NKVD, Vasily Blokhin, was considered the biggest mass murderer in history. He personally shot over 7,000 people with his Tokarev automatic. Probably went through several Tokarevs, but he killed something in the region of a third of the Polish prisoners of war officers in the Katyn Forest Massacre. Sat there and, you know, complained about how it hurts his hand, the recoil of the gun, and had people rotating through, giving him new magazines, brought the next one in, shot him back of the head, next one, so on. And so this chap was the top executioner, Guinness Book of Records character. And the poor people who had to endure this what they went through, the massacres. The Soviets killed millions, hundreds of millions, ultimately, if you want to take everything from the Soviet Union, Red China, all the communist areas, and if you want to add the victims of abortion in these countries, absolutely horrific. Today, there are attempts to put a face to the many victims of the communist executions, and these are just some of the people who were targeted. Then, of course, the NKVD or KGB operated espionage. And here's one of the first American operatives, and that's Raymond Robbins. Raymond Robbins here, an American in St. Petersburg, with his KGB handler, Alex Skumberg. Of course, they did a lot of political assassinations, the most famous being Leon Trotsky. They actually axed the hero of the Soviet Revolution, the one-time head of the Red Army, Leon Trotsky. He was axed in the head literally with an ice pick in 1940, was it, in Mexico City. You can go and see Trotsky's grave in Mexico City, if you wanted. Well, they had concentration camps, they enforced Stalinist policy, and they also enforced other communist movements in other countries. So they went way past just their own borders. Because when the Soviet Union was given by Western betrayal, by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Winston Churchill at the Yalta Agreement, when they were given to their hands the whole of Poland, east of Germany, Prussia, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Albania, and not to mention Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Ukraine, Belarus, when those are all betrayed into the hands of Stalin, the NKVD were the ones who came in and murdered millions. The NKVD was officially responsible to protect the state security of the Soviet Union through mass political repression, kidnappings, murders, assassinations, both locally and internationally. Those designated enemies of the people were sent to the Gulag camps, and many tens of thousands, in fact hundreds of thousands, were executed by the KGB. The families of those designated enemies of the people, including their children, were automatically repressed according to NKVD Order 00486. And then NKVD also organized the show trials and Great Purge Order 00447. That was when they killed the greatest heroes of the revolution. The main people who were the foot soldiers and the organizers who brought the Soviet Union about, who overthrew the Tsar of Russia, they were wiped out, over 100,000 of them. Actually, it was a couple of 100,000. In the 1930s, they wiped out some of their best generals, best leaders, their best foot soldiers, their most dedicated communists in the show trials. Why? In fact, communists always do this. When they get into power, they can't trust the people who brought them to power, because first of all, they know they're going to betray them, and they won't fulfill the promises they made them. And these people know how to overthrow a government and organize a revolution. So they're the first to get a bullet in the back of the head. Zimbabwe, who was the hero of the revolution there? Josiah Tongarara. Josiah Tongarara was the leader of ZANLA. He was the foot soldier. He was the leader of the guerrillas, so-called, in Mozambique. And he was set to be the first prime minister of Zimbabwe because Mugabe was a nothing, nobody politico who'd never heard a shot fired in anger, who, if you see a picture in the camouflage, he looks awfully awkward in it, and he doesn't know what to do, and he's obviously not someone who's ever handled a rifle or something. And so Mugabe organized the assassination of Josiah Tongarara, the hero of the Zimbabwe Revolution. In fact, you can go to Zimbabwe and see posters. Who killed Josiah Tongarara? And everyone knows. Mugabe. Who killed the hero of the revolution of Frelimo in Mozambique? Zamora Machel killed Eduardo Mondlane. The main road in Maputo is Eduardo Mondlane Avenue. Eduardo Mondlane is the founder of Frelimo. Well, he got murdered to make way for our dear friend Zamora Machel. Who's the hero of the Communist Party in South Africa? Chris Hani. Chris Hani got assassinated in 1993, and in fact, if he hadn't, who would have, no way would Zuma or Mbeki been able to come to power. And to her dying day, Winnie Mandela maintained, and to his right to this moment, we've still got people like General Bantu Holomisa, absolutely adamant that the ANC, it was an inside job, even though this Polish guy got the blame, but inside job to assassinate Chris Hani. He was the head of the Southern Communist Party, head of Nkuntu Wesizwe, and so it was an internal murder. Just like the fact that Trotsky gets killed. So communists tend to be, what do you call it? Cannibalistic, a killer. Here's the order, 44-7. So the Great Purge, this is what communists do. the Holodomor, starving millions of Ukrainians to death through dekulakization, or what Mugabe calls land reform. Now this volume on Stalin's terror continues Rogovin's exhaustive study of the Great Purge, which he began earlier on, the political genocide in the Soviet Union, where they got rid of their main communists. So this was a kind of, you know, communist killing communists. What's not to like? But this is just the way they work. If we could get people in the EFF and the ANC and the South Communist Party to understand, the moment they succeed with their second phase of the revolution, they're going to get a bullet in the back of the head. That's the way it's always worked. Communists always do it. The prototype revolution, the French Revolution, who ended up in the guillotine after the aristocrats and the ordinary people and the seamstresses? Even Robespierre himself. Danton, all these great leaders of the French Revolution, they all ended up in the guillotine. They betrayed one another, they murdered one another, and in the end, the top leader of them all, Robespierre, who's actually the Lenin of the French Revolution, he ends up on the guillotine too. So this is just to understand the way it works. The Great Purge of Stalin's Russia. More than 2,000 upper-class Lithuanians seized unexpectedly by the NKVD in Lithuania and just wiped out. This is just 1941, the Lithuanians being wiped out by the Soviet NKVD. And here are just some of the NKVD officers in World War II. These people, all of them, responsible for the deaths of countless victims. Like in Lvov, in what is today Ukraine. Under leadership of the great Stalin, forward to communism, and these are playing cards that are distributed, idolatry of a high order. Look at this kind of idolatrous image there of Lenin and the blood-red flag. And here's the anniversary of KGB, 70th anniversary of KGB, 1987. Who's celebrating this? Mikhail Gorbachev. 1987, look at that idol. And that's a KGB badge. And I've got an example of a KGB badge if you capture Nagola in that cabinet right there. A real deal, not a replica. So, this brings me to active measures. This is just background. What's this got to do with us? Active measures was the Soviet term for the actions of political warfare conducted by the Soviet Security Service, that's the Cheka and the NKVD, which later became the KGB, to influence the course of world events, including in South Africa. In addition to collecting intelligence and producing politically correct assessment of intelligence, active measures included media manipulation through disinformation, propaganda, counterfeiting official documents, infiltrating churches, intimidating dissidents, character assassinations, fines, imprisonments, and assassinations. All of this affects us. They infiltrated every denomination, Catholic, Methodist, Anglican, ultimately even the Pentecostals. They managed to get into every denomination, every seminary. They infiltrated Hollywood, they infiltrated news media. They created huge groups all over the world. Active measures include the establishment and support of international front organizations such as the World Peace Council. This is not a theory. This is now documented from their own files which have been opened. They set up terrorist groups all over the world. They set up wars of national liberation in third world countries, normally using Fidel Castro's Cubans as their proxies, as their stooges, to advance Soviet goals, such as in Angola and Mozambique. Here's Agostinho Neto, who is the dictator of Angola when I started my work. So Agostinho Neto is called a drunken, psychotic Marxist poet, which he was. By the way, Agostinho Neto stood up and declared to the people in Angola in 1976, "I have destroyed the Bible. You won't be able to find a Bible on the face of Angola. In the future, you'll have to go into a museum and see what a Bible looks like." Well, he died on an operating table in Moscow. And our mission has smuggled more Bibles into Angola than there was when he made that false prophecy. NKVD active measures infiltrate the World Council of Churches and controlled it. Charles Spurgeon said, "That very church which the world likes best is sure to be that which God abhors." I think the World Council of Churches fits the false church. They're the whore of Babylon. They are prostitutes of the world. They are not a true church. They've infiltrated educational institutions. As far afield as Cape Town, University of Cape Town was targeted for active measures and set up a lot of organizations on university campus. Controlled the Student Representative Council in the 1980s. The reason why universities have moved from being places of higher learning into places of conformity is, to a large extent, the work of active measures of the KGB. Hollywood was infiltrated early in the 1920s. Very early, the communists were the only party in town in Hollywood. They made it a high priority to infiltrate Hollywood. Stalin put it as the most important priority externally for the Comintern, the Communist International. And class war music. Very important part of NKVD active measures was to promote revolutionary type music that would break down not just society, but churches. Music to get into churches that would break down Christianity by portraying music that will be anti-Christian within the church. And, of course, infiltrating news media. They've been very effective at infiltrating news media, and I think covers such as this. I mean, the new direction, not the Soviet Union, Russia. And this is, of course, Khrushchev. And just look at this hammer, the sickle and the wheat. What do you think this is symbolizing? Bumper wheat harvests in Ukraine? Or preparing the church for the next purge is more like it. And so this is part of how many times has a communist dictator like Stalin been Man of the Year of Time magazine? I think Stalin was on the cover of Time magazine 5 times. Mao Zedong at least twice. Castro several times too. And I introduced you yesterday to the character here, Antonio Gramsci. Antonio Gramsci said, the civilized world has been thoroughly saturated by Christianity for 2,000 years. Any country grounded in Judeo-Christian values cannot be overthrown until those roots are cut. But to cut the roots, to change the culture, a long march to the institutions, that's the education, government, religion, is necessary. Only then will power fall into our laps like ripened fruit. And so this is part of the multiculturalism, political correctness, to be able to undermine the West. And of course, the banksters, who have funded the Bolshevik Revolution from the very beginning. Make no mistake, the banksters, I join the word gangster and banker together to make gangster, these creeps have caused the wars and they have betrayed countries. KGB General Oleg Kalugin described active measures as the heart and soul of Soviet intelligence. And this is Joe Slover, right next to Nelson Mandela's handler, Colonel Joe Slover, KGB Colonel, and he was tasked to be the handler for Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela was a senior member of the Southern Communist Party's Politburo, even though he denied his whole life that he is a communist, and yet we've got a document in our files here which was entered into evidence at the Rivonia trial, which was not contested, in the own handwriting of Nelson Mandela, how to be a good communist. A whole book, how to be a good communist, and it's in this, and he never contested it in court. It was entered into evidence against him. When he died, it was announced by all his family and everyone. He always was a senior member of the Southern Communist Party, but he denied he was a communist for tactical reasons, so that he could be accepted and supported and so on. Well, it's not just that. In fact, the Denton Commission, sent to Jeremiah Denton in 1982, organized an investigation into involvement of Soviet Union in revolutions around the world, and he had Bartholomew Chlopane, a key member of the Communist Party of South Africa, who testified before the Denton Commission in the Senate in America that the KGB controlled the Southern Communist Party and the Southern Communist Party controlled the ANC. And they did nothing without the active measures department of the KGB initiating and approving it. When he came back, they proved him right by assassinating him and his wife and paralyzing their daughter, Pansy. This is an attack in 1982, December 1982, in Soweto. I've wheeled Pansy Chlopane in a wheelchair to Frankfurt for Kirchentag, and I saw communists shaking boxes of matches in the face, saying, "We will necklace you." In other words, we will burn you alive. Tire, gasoline, necklace murder, like Winnie Mandela threatened people he didn't like. And Pansy Chlopane testified around the world about what the communists did to her parents because her dad had the courage to speak out against communism. Kalugin described active measures as subversion, active measures to weaken the West, to drive wedges in Western community alliances of all sorts, particularly NATO, to sow discord amongst allies. to weaken the United States alliance of the peoples of Europe and Asia, Africa, Latin America, thus to prepare the ground for revolution. The Andropov Institute of the KGB near Moscow taught active measures as a system of special courses. Active measures is a whole department of studies. And here's Yuri Andropov, who is KGB chairman, later became general secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Now, the head of the active measures department was Yuri Modin. And Yuri Modin has written a book on my five Cambridge friends. And notice the hands with the hammer and sickle. It's because you call the person who controls an agent in another country a handler. So he was the handler for these five famous British traitors: Burgess, McLean, Thorby, Blunt and Cancross. All of them top British agents, but they were double agents working for the KGB. The Cambridge Five, people often call them. And they undermined British military intelligence for decades. Some of the most famous active measures conducted by the KGB that are now documented by declassified archives include stirring up racial tensions in the United States by staging incidents. So the KGB staged racial incidents in the United States. Super easy when you've got a group that wears masks. And I mean, how do you know whether you're being infiltrated or not when everyone's wearing a mask and hood? How easy is that? So the KGB was running the operations. They infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan. They sent bogus letters to the press claiming to be from the Ku Klux Klan. And they did incidents like bombings, explosive packages, Negro sections of the American population, and Operation Pandora, organized by active measures. Now, this is all declassified. This isn't a theory. This is now, now it's a fact. Yep, we did it, they said. They fabricate the story that AIDS virus was manufactured by US scientists. And these are some of the KGB officers working on active measures. Very proud of themselves. One Soviet department, the GRU, alone spent more than $1 billion in 1970s to fund the peace movements in America protesting the Vietnam War. $1 billion is a lot of money today. It's a lot more money back in 1970s. The peace movements. They describe these movements as a hugely successful campaign and well worth the cost. You see, to break down the morale of your enemy and to break down your enemy's willingness to fight, much cheaper than fighting them. Stanislav Lunov claimed that GRU and the KGB helped to fund just about every anti-war movement, every organization in America, Great Britain, throughout Europe, and South Africa. The End Conscription campaign in South Africa was funded by the KGB Active Measures Department. Based in Cape Town, all over South Africa. The End Conscription campaign was a big group in the 1980s into the 90s, and active measures ran it. According to Oleg Kalugin, Soviet intelligence was really unparalleled. A KGB program which would run all sorts of congresses, peace congresses, youth congresses, festivals, women's movements, trade union movements, campaigns against the United States and Europe, allegations that AIDS was invented by the United States CIA, all sorts of forgeries, fake materials, targeted politicians, academic community, and the public at large. They would just produce documents which they could, totally fraudulent. Some of them were proven after a while. For example, the documents from the Second World War that the KGB produced, which people said, but they didn't have colons and quote marks on typewriters in the 1940s. And, there's some of them that didn't match the test, and sometimes the paper was too white, and they weren't able to make paper that white at that time, and there's some things that the typewriters couldn't do. On reflection, you can see these were fakes. But many people still accept, these are true documents, because the Soviets produced documents purporting to have come from the enemies, the Germans, in order to discredit the enemies and to discourage people to resist communism. So the KGB was involved in undermining and installing governments like the overthrow of Czechoslovakia and Hungary and all that sort of thing. Of course, setting up the Berlin Wall, Iron Curtain. The KGB played a key role in installing puppet communist regimes throughout Eastern Europe, overthrowing those that caused them problems at any time, and, of course, the People's Republic of China, so-called, which killed millions of people, and North Korea, and the Korean conflict. The KGB coordinated mass political repressions and establishment of subordinate secret services in all occupied territories, including the Stasi. The Stasi being the East German secret police. Now, the last attempted coup organization of the KGB In the uprising against Boris Yeltsin, against the Russian constitution, led to the abolition of the KGB in 1993 and its replacement with the Federal Security Service and the Foreign Intelligence Service of the Russian Federation. So officially now, the KGB has been abolished. And they now have a Federal Security Service. One of the tactics used by the KGB was an agent provocateur or inciting agent, and there's many times they would do it. In fact, during, for example, the January 6th, 2021 incident at the Capitol, there were many cases where people were all shouting, "Fed, Fed, Fed," when there's somebody who's trying to incite, you know, breaking windows or something, and the local people recognized this is someone who's probably working for the FBI, which has now been proven. There were FBI agents with the group inciting the people, agent provocateurs. There's often agent provocateurs. And you will have, for example, in Canada, when the truckers were there and the truckers were involved in protesting against Canadian repression of Trudeau, and they were all flying Canadian flags, and then there was one Confederate flag. And it was, the person was wearing a full mask, whereas everyone else was protesting masks, not wearing masks, and a full face mask, you couldn't even see who it was. And the people all shouting, you know, "Fed" and so on. Obviously, somebody in, was it Virginia, they had some protests, and one person brought out a swastika flag, and again, masked up, couldn't tell who it was, obviously an agent provocateur. They will do these things in order to put down an entire movement by having inserting radicals. An agent provocateur is an undercover agent who acts to incite another person to commit an illegal or rash act or falsely implicates others in taking part in illegal acts. They found out, for example, during the looking for white supremacist right-wing neo-Nazi groups in Idaho, they found entire groups entirely made up of American federal agents. FBI, CIA, other groups, NSI, just like NSA, couldn't keep up with it. And they got frustrated that frequently the very groups, they'd not only set up the groups, but everyone belonging to the group belonged to some federal agency. But they didn't know about the other ones then. So some of this has come out, and you can just see they're continually organizing their own opposition. The goal of the agent provocateur is to discredit or harm another group by provoking them to commit a crime or implicating them in a crime, to undermine the group, to undermine the protest, the movement as a whole. And many times it's been proven. The US government and the Canadian government are doing it all the time to demonize their opposition. In the trust operation of 1921 to 1926, the Soviets set up fake anti-Bolshevik underground organizations, including the Monarchist Union of Central Russia, to control and neutralize monarchists and other counter-revolutionaries. So the thought of Lenin was, look, the people we've overthrown are going to organize a counter-revolution. So the best way to counter it is set up the counter-revolution ourselves, and then we know who the others are, and we can know what their plans are, and we can negate them. I mean, who would imagine that the man who set up the Monarchist Union of Central Russia was actually a KGB agent, or NKVD in that case. And that's how they did it. They neutralized it all. Do you know the Southern government did the same? Which organization did the National Party set up as an apparent opposition to itself? National Party government, 1970s, 80s, 1990s. AWB. I was told by the head of South African military intelligence directly that, in fact, it was a security policeman, Eugene Tablanche, a security police sergeant, was tasked by the National Party government to set up the AWB. Now, that doesn't mean everyone in the AWB weren't real. Many were, sincere. But the leader was fake. He was there to attract, and he was a very good speaker. I heard him speak in Cape Town. Eugene Tablanche was a very convincing speaker. But he was working for the government the whole way along, and in the end they assassinated him so he couldn't speak much more about it. And so people came to him. That's why everything the AWB did to try and undermine the government failed. They all arrested immediately because the government knew what their plans were before they knew themselves. They set up their own controlled opposition. The KGB used provocateurs to entrap and discredit anti-communist groups, which they described as reactionaries and counter-revolutionaries. And the easiest of all was the Ku Klux Klan in America, because they're wearing robes, so who can tell who's who? And that's why Ku Klux Klan became undermined thoroughly, because as the KGB says, we infiltrated and we controlled it. After the Second World War, many NKVD agents were set up to join and penetrate independence movements to create puppet rebel forces, who were permitted to attack local Soviet authorities to gain credibility and to exfiltrate senior NKVD agents to the West to neutralize and betray real resistance movements and partisans. In other words, they would set up their own opposition, who would even attack NKVD border guards and kill KGB spies and so on, and betray them to get credibility, so that they could do a bigger betrayal later. One of the biggest treble crosses of the Second World War was a Soviet agent who was believed by the Germans to be turned to their side, who gave information leading to such major victories that enabled the German Wehrmacht to wipe out hundreds of thousands of Red Army troops, which meant that this man was lifted up to such a high level of respect, the secret corps exposed the whole thing, by Max Hastings, that this treble agent, which the Germans thoroughly trusted, because they couldn't imagine Stalin would betray whole armies of his, 80,000 men here, 100,000 there, to gain credibility, to set up the biggest trap of all at Kursk, for the ultimate tank battle of all, where the Germans were trusting this agent with impeccable records because he had given him such great victories, and he was working for Stalin all the time, and they walked into the trap of all traps. That's how cold-blooded they were. They were willing to sacrifice hundreds of thousands of their own men just to set up a bigger trap. Who can imagine such callous, cold-blooded treachery? KGB General Alexander Sakharovsky declared, in today's world where nuclear arms have made worldwide force obsolete, terrorism should become a main weapon. And so they set up the Viet Cong and so many other groups that became the Khmer Rouge and others, who butchered and terrorized people. Now, Ion Mia Pasepa declared the KGB was the primary instructor of guerrillas worldwide. General Sakharovsky claimed that aeroplane hijacking is my own invention. The KGB came up with the ideas, and they mobilized the Palestinian Liberation Organization and other terrorist groups to carry them out. And by the way, Ion Mia Pasepa, believe it or not, was the real-life inspiration for Ian Fleming's James Bond. Now, he was a KGB agent, but this man was such a gambling, smoking, drinking, womanizing, playboy, free-spending agent, even though he's KGB, he was the real-life inspiration for the James Bond of Ian Fleming's 007 books. Believe it or not, doesn't quite look as handsome as some of the actors who played him, but there we go. In 1969 alone, 82 aircraft were hijacked worldwide by the KGB-financed PLO. This led to complete transformation of air travel. I remember traveling by air as a young boy in Rhodesia. You'd get on a plane with no security. I mean no security. You would walk straight out of the airport terminal onto the plane, up the tarmac, up the stairs, and there would be we didn't have flight attendants. We had air stewardesses. And they would say, please ensure that your pistols are on safe and securely holstered, and that all rifles and machine guns are on safe and placed in overhead compartments. Not a joke. No known hijacking of Rhodesian aircraft. So, you know, people would carry their rifles and machine guns on the plane, sure it's unsafe, no round in the chamber, put in overhead compartments. And we didn't have security on planes. We didn't need it. I mean, we had armed citizens, so that was fine. Once these terrorist attacks began, 1968, 69, 70, and so on, suddenly air travel became an obstacle course, a real bunch of problems. Anyway, the KGB says we started that. It was our ideas. And this is just one of the famous TWA hijackings in Beirut. And so many of these poor people, even poor Swiss Air got nailed. No end of this complicated air travel forever. Palestinian terrorist, PFLP terrorists blowing these things up. SS Pan Am Flight 93 blown up over Scotland. The KGB established the PLO, and these are some of the terrorists that were the poster children of the PLO, all designed for, it was for the press. The National Liberation Army of Bolivia was set up with the help of Ernesto Che Guevara by the KGB. He was a dirty, unwashed, mass-murdering thug who boasted that he had killed over 4,000 women and children personally with his own gun. Hatred is an element of the struggle, a relentless hatred of the enemy, transforming him into an effective, violent, selective, cold-blooded killing machine. A people without hatred cannot vanquish a brutal enemy. And this is the man whose face is worn on how many teenagers' t-shirts? In the Cuban Revolution, Che Guevara ran the slave labor camps, organized the mass executions. He was Fidel Castro's supreme executioner and prosecutor. Under Che, the walls of the old fort in Havana resounded nightly with the fusillades of firing squads. In just 3 years, over 4,000 executions, most by firing squads, are documented to have taken place under Che Guevara. All these executions took place without due process of law, without fair trials, without courts and anything. Che admitted he ordered several thousand executions. So perhaps those who want to wear Che Guevara's image on the front of the t-shirt should have this quote on the back of Che's t-shirt. Hatred is an element of the struggle, unbending hatred for the enemy, which pushes a human being beyond his natural limitations, making him an effective, violent, selective, cold-blooded killing machine. This is what a soldier must become. Crazy with fury, I will stain my rifle red while slaughtering any enemy that falls in my hands. My nostrils dilate while savoring the acrid odor of gunpowder and blood. With the deaths of my enemies, I prepare my being for the sacred fight and join the triumphant proletariat with a bestial howl. Bestial. It's like the beast of the pit. In fact, said Che Guevara, if Christ himself stood my way, I, like Nietzsche, would not hesitate to squish him like a worm. Well, good luck to that. I think right now he's being squished like a worm, and Che Guevara knows that you don't mess with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and Jesus is the conqueror, and honestly, I'm sure he's got a very special place in hell. Karl Marx declared the very first battlefield is a rewriting of history. So it would appear that everyone participating in the romanticizing and the glamorizing of this Marxist mass murderer, Che Guevara, are not only advertising the ignorance of history, but they're helping to reorganize reality, promote the undeserved hero worship of a communist killer. While Che Guevara could be brave while he's murdering disarmed civilians, including a 14-year-old child, in the La Cabana fortress, he is cowardly when he was captured by the Bolivian army. Che groveled and begged for his life before the Bolivians did to him what he had done to so many others. What a man sows, that shall he reap. Well, these revolutions all over the world were organized by active measures of the KGB. This was no accident, this was not spontaneous. Everywhere, all over, from the Congo to Uganda, Central African Republic, all over, the people in Africa getting oppressed by tools of the active measures department of the KGB. SWAPO had Soviet and Chinese mortars equipped to them. Car bomb in Kalahari Sands in Windhoek, Southwest Africa, organized by the KGB. ZANU-PF, special pawn of active measures. The war in Rhodesia, organized by active measures. The murder of chiefs and headmen in Rhodesia, the massacre of Matabele, the bayoneting of people in the back, all of this organized by the KGB, active measures, murders of missionaries, murders of airliners, shooting down of airliners with heat-seeking Soviet Strela missiles, the supporting of Joshua Nkomo's ZAPU terrorist, Robert Mugabe. These are tools of active measures. And all the way through, Frelimo in Mozambique, or the MPLA in Angola, the ANC in South Africa, their car bombs that they used, for example, in Church Street, 1982, all organized by active measures. The KGB was also implicated in Muhammad Ali Akka's 1981 assassination attempt against Pope John Paul II. Because of Pope John Paul's strong links with the anti-communist solidarity movement in Poland, solidarity was causing the Soviets grief in the 1980s, and a Polish pope was considered just too inconvenient. And so the Soviets organized not just crackdown of martial law in Poland and to try and get rid of Lech Walesa, but here you can see Mehmet Acker holding the gun there seconds before the attempted assassination of Pope John Paul in St. Peter's Square, Vatican City, 1981. Well, the Pope did survive this, and he did meet with this character, and of course, Lech Walesa did end up taking Poland back from the Soviets. The GRU, the military intelligence of the Soviet Union, recruited Alger Hiss, an American lawyer and State Department official who became the first General Secretary of the United Nations. Elga Hess was prosecuted successfully for being a KGB agent. Australia's delegation to the United Nations conference in San Francisco, California, and who is the General Secretary here? Elga Hess. San Francisco conference, and you can see Nelson Rockefeller, Assistant Secretary of State of the United States at the time. Elga Hess was exposed, identified by Whittaker Chambers, who was a former Communist Party member. And that's quite a case. Just Elga Hess, he is FDR's handpicked man to be the first General Secretary of the Soviet Union. First General Secretary of the United Nations. And here, him being summoned before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Chambers also identified Loris Dugin and Michael Strait in the State Department, and Henry Dexter White in the Treasury Department as Soviet agents. All over the United States, one after the other, these people were found to be active measures agents serving the Soviets. Now, here's the most extraordinary story of them all. How many of you have heard of the Profumo scandal? Okay. Well, this scandal brought down Harold Macmillan's Conservative government in Great Britain at a very key time. And it brought the Labour Party to power in the 1964 general election. It is a masterful example of KGB active measures, including entrapment, propaganda, and assassination. They should make a film about this. It's just incredible. John Profumo was the Secretary of State for War in Britain, basically Minister of War, Minister of Defence. And his wife, a well-known actress, he was a British war minister, and this is a picture taken in 1959. Now, he was involved for a short time in an affair with Christine Keeler, a 19-year-old model. And, interestingly enough, here's Stephen Ward, who is a strange character, connected with British intelligence, very connected with British intelligence, and here's a picture in 1963, just before the whole scandal broke, with Christine Keeler, who was his girl, who he introduced to the Minister of War, or Secretary for War, John Profumo. She was also the girlfriend of Captain Ivanov of the Soviet Naval Attaché, in other words, KGB agent in the Soviet Embassy in London. So here's Ward, Stephen Ward, who's an asset of British military intelligence. And he's got a girlfriend who is a girlfriend of both the British Secretary of War and the KGB military attaché at the same time. Okay, this already is a bit mind-boggling, but it gets far more interesting than this. This is late in life John Profumo, who, by the way, became a dedicated Christian after this horrible incident. But although the affair had ended in 1962, the KGB active measures timed the publications of the scandal for 1963, just before the general elections. Why waste a good scandal if it's not going to affect the next elections? They controlled the British media to such an extent they could sit on the scandal for over a year. How is that possible? And so it brought down the British government. It didn't just lead to the British Secretary of War, who was believed to be the next most likely candidate as Prime Minister of England after Macmillan. With a Conservative government disgraced by this public scandal, which the media gave front page treatment, 24-hour type of treatment to, the way was clear for Hugh Todd Gaitskell, the man on the right, leader of the Labour Party, to become the next Prime Minister of Great Britain. And most of you would say, who's Gaitskell? Exactly. Hugh Todd Naylor Gaitskell was the leader of the Labour Party, and he was likely to be the next Prime Minister of England. Only, he's just a leftist. He wasn't an asset of the KGB. So the abrupt and strange death of Gaitskell at age 56 left an opening for Harold Wilson to exploit and seize control of the Labour Party. Harold Wilson came from nowhere, and he suddenly became head of the Labour Party, and he became next Prime Minister of Britain because of the timing. Now, this is so extraordinary. Peter Wright's book, 1987 book, Spycatcher. How many have read Spycatcher? Okay, nobody. Spycatcher, written by Peter Wright, and Soviet defector Antonin Galitsyn both claimed that Gaitskell was assassinated by the KGB in order to place their agent of influence, Harold Wilson, codename Oldman, into the key position of Prime Minister of Great Britain at this critical time. This is just before Rhodesia is trying to get independence, by the way. and Harold Wilson stopped. Harold Wilson is an asset of the KGB. Proven, files are opened, and so on. Gaitskill was invited to visit the Soviet Union just before his death. Now, that's nice, all expenses paid visit, but they wouldn't give him a visa unless he personally came, sent his secretary back here to go and personally collect his visa. He goes, sorry, it's delayed. Please just wait for you. Get some coffee for you. Tea and biscuits are brought to him. Shortly after that, he dies of a rare liver disease. Now, it so happened that decades later, it turned out that Soviet agents had discovered a way of introducing this rare liver disease through either liquid form, such as tea, or a solid form, such as a biscuit. And those are the examples they gave. Exactly what Gaitskill received in this bizarre situation where the Soviet embassy invites him. And it's just before the elections, when he's about to become next Prime Minister of Britain, and in comes Harold Wilson. Where did he come from? And so suddenly, but think of the coordination to be able to take down the British Conservative government of Macmillan by a scandal with his war minister, which had ended a year before, which is organised by British military intelligence asset, Stephen Ward, by having a girlfriend shared with a KGB agent in the Soviet embassy and with the British Secretary of War. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. This is more incredible than anything that any Hollywood film could come up with. By the way, Antonov Galitsyn is one of the top Soviet defectors of all time. Here's another, Oleg Penkovsky, who was one of the agents exposed by Peter Wright. Peter Wright was the spy catcher. His job was to find double agents. By the way, one of the things that he points out is that the head of British military intelligence, you know M in the James Bond movies? M from 1945 to 1968, M was Sir Roger Hollis, also KGB asset. Kind of ruins a lot of the Bond films when you realise that M giving Bond instructions was actually a KGB agent in real life. Very embarrassing. Notice the key, it's Britain, America, but being controlled by the communists. They've got the key. And so Malcolm Turnbull put out this book on the spycatcher trial. Peter Wright had to flee to Australia to get away from Britain. By the way, his book, Spycatcher, is still banned in Britain. Quite a story. So Wilson oversaw the disastrous betrayal of Rhodesia and other key aspects of British Commonwealth, as well as the implosion of the British economy and escalation of the war in Northern Ireland. It was, for example, Harold Wilson who sent to Northern Ireland the British paratroopers at a key time, 1969, where the paratroopers, given no warning, no rubber bullets, no shields, no gas masks, no helmets, and they're there with their red berets, sent with their 7.62 rifles into Londonderry, and they have a mob coming towards them, led by some Catholic priests. And as the mob gets close to the British paratroopers, this is Bloody Sunday, they part, and there's IRA gunmen on the ground, and they fire straight down the middle into the British troops, and then the whole crowd closed up to protect the gunmen. And the British paratroopers just did what they're trained to do, they opened fire on the crowd. Londonderry, Bloody Sunday, massacre. Well, who sent the paratroopers into a city with nothing but hard round ammunition? And what do you think is going to happen? Well, this escalated the Northern Ireland conflict, which is obviously exactly what old man KGB agent of influence Harold Wilson wanted. Harold Wilson destroyed the British economy, destroyed the British Empire. Brilliant setup. And of course, he is the nemesis for Ian Smith and the one who killed the ideas of Rhodesia getting a proper independence. Now, five agents working for the CIA were all imprisoned in the Soviet Union and subsequently executed because of information that came from these agents from the Cambridge. The Cambridge spies, Philby, Blunt, Burgess, McLean, Cancross. There was a spate of Soviet agents infiltrating British intelligence during and after the Second World War and through much of the Cold War. The Cambridge spies, Anthony Blunt, the Queen's right-hand man for everything to do with architecture and design. Guy Burgess, who is also major... Donald McLean is this smiley character here. A lot of people died because of him. The worst of them all was Kim Philby. Guy Burgess was the homosexual of the group. These are some of the traitors of the British military intelligence. And so these characters were responsible for the deaths of vast amounts of people. But worse than any of them was Sir Roger Hollis, actually. Kim Philby did a lot of bad things. He oversaw, for example, the assassination of the British, the Polish commander-in-chief in exile, General Sikorsky, 4th of July, 1943 in Gibraltar. Kim Philby was on point. He was the one responsible to do the dirty deed. And Sir Roger Hollis, M. Does he look a bit like M in the James Bond movies? That's what it's based on. Sir Roger Hollis. They caused incalculable damage to the free world during a key time in history. And so Yuri Modlin calls them my men. It's unlikely that any other intelligence agency in history has been responsible for as many arrests, tortures, imprisonments, murders, massacres, assassinations, launching of more foreign wars, sponsoring and training of more foreign terrorist movements, toppling of governments, funding of so many revolutionary movements worldwide than the KGB. Well, I believe the CIA is trying hard to catch up. The Black Book of Communism catalogues over 100 million deaths between 1917 and 1991 alone, caused by communist governments, most of them controlled by the Soviet Union and the agencies. As the Black Book of Communism documents, communist states did not merely commit criminal acts, they were criminal enterprises, in the very essence, on principle. They ruled lawlessly by violence and without regard to human life. 2 Peter 2 verse 19. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will make stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Any questions? Active measures, disinformation. How many had heard before that Harold Wilson was a Soviet agent? One. How many before had heard of the term active measures? Okay, two. How many before were aware of the Cambridge Five terrorists, traitors? Several of you. Okay, good. Questions?
Have you ever seen peacekeeping troops from the EU doing good in a country, for a country?
Not aware of any. I'm aware of the United Nations making bad situations much, much worse. I've seen the United Nations operations at work in Namibia, in Angola, in Mozambique, in Rwanda, in Sudan, in the Congo. In every case, they made the situation worse and committed horrible crimes. The EU was involved in so-called peacekeeping operations in old Yugoslavia, Bosnia, Serbia, and so on, and I know massacres occurred under them. Where else did the EU do peacekeeping operations? Old Yugoslavia, they did quite a lot. I think that Afghanistan was an EU operation as well, or NATO operation at least. That was a mess. I can't think of any case that the EU has made the situation better when they've had so-called peacekeeping operations. Can anyone else think of a case where they actually made the situation better? I didn't think so. Any other questions, comments? Active measures, disinformation. Yes? Yes?
What issues did the Frankfurt School have?
The Frankfurt School? Well, the Frankfurt School was certainly one of their key assets, because the Comintern commissioned a lot of what was being done. So there's no doubt that what the Frankfurt School was doing was they were part of active measures overseas. They were a very, very key part because they infiltrated and hijacked huge amounts of Western academia and news media. So they would have been one of the most productive sources of active measures. But they were the think tank more than anything else. But as a think tank, they produced many disciples who really took things further. By the way, Antonio Gramsci, founder of the Italian Communist Party and the founder of the Gramsci strategy, the Termite strategy. Do you know he was quoted by Hillary Clinton as the most... Sorry, I've mistaken. Bill Clinton, when he became president, was asked, who has most influenced you? Who's been a mentor to you? He said, Antonio Gramsci. Bill Clinton, upon becoming president of the United States of America, quoted one of the key Frankfurt School of Marxism, Antonio Gramsci, founder of the Italian Communist Party. He's the one who's most inspired me. When Hillary Clinton, or should I say Billary Clinton, when she was asked who most inspires her, she said Herbert Marcuse. Marcuse, who's also Frankfurt School, who said we must use obscenity and vulgarity and blasphemy to defile the arts and to corrupt all music and artistic expression and films and so on in the West. So interesting that Marcuse and Gramsci were the inspiration for the Clintons. It explains a lot of their policies, of course. Any other comments? Yes. Right. So originally, if I understand correct, the Ku Klux Klan started out to be a protection for people who were being victimized by the Yankee Federals, carpetbaggers, who came in after the war between the states to basically rape and loot and destroy the South. And so the Ku Klux Klan was there to protect the people who now had lost their army to protect them. So many of them would have been old Confederate forces, some of them actually Confederate generals. And so the Ku Klux Klan, I think there was a film, A Birth of a Nation, was an old film. Birth of a Nation was a film that gave a very favorable presentation of how the Ku Klux Klan started. And that film was even shown in the White House. There was a time that in the 1930s that was considered a very good film. But of course, Ku Klux Klan later got a reputation of being horrible, rabid, evil, racist, terrorist, and so on. But that's because of KGB active measures infiltrating. Can you give a better answer? The men in white, the Ku Klux Klan. Ryan, what would you say?
Well, the Ku Klux Klan was founded in the 1860s in the aftermath of the war on the aggression. The Yankees came down, conquered our states, and they encouraged lawlessness, anarchy, murdering, living, killing, etc. The Ku Klux Klan was founded as a civil defense organization, somewhat similar to the Orange Order in Ireland. Nathaniel Forrest, the great Confederate general, was one of the founding members. However, it was hijacked later on in the 19th century and the 20th century, largely because of its secretive nature. It needed to be secretive when it was founded, because, again, the South was occupied by an enemy force. And the Yankees did not want civil defense organizations. They wanted the South to be looted and pillaged. So that was the reason for the hoods and the robes and the secret signs and all of that. It was a way of concealing their activities from the Yankee authorities. But it opened them to infiltration.
Interesting that I've seen pictures of the Ku Klux Klan marching in Washington, D.C. with Union flags. Lots of them marching with Union flags, and it didn't seem to be a problem. You know, police standing by the side of the road, and so this was apparently acceptable for them to be walking in the open in Washington, D.C. with the Yankee flag.
And that would have been probably in the later 19th century, early 20th century, as a part of the National Reconciliation. So another great example of that movement would be the Robert E. Lee Memorial in Arlington Cemetery, which is the massive cemetery just outside D.C., where
well, obviously, reconciliation is no longer a priority to them. Any other comments, observations?
I know that I've heard that often people that massacred like blacks just often simply wore like white robes and white masks.
I don't think that's true.
I've heard like often that people say.
Did the Ku Klux Klan massacre black people in the South after, well, ever?
No.
Yeah.
That would tend towards that direction. But again, the Yankees invaded the southern states and they encouraged the newly liberated slaves to loot and pillage white homes, rape, murder, pillage, etc. They did it as well as the carpetbaggers. So the white Northerners were in the South, and even the soldiers itself. There was a definite need for a civil defense force, and at least for the first decades of the history, that's what it was.
Have you seen the film Gone with the Wind? Yes. Gone with the Wind gives a positive view of the South and gives an explanation as to why the people in the South needed to defend themselves and what was happening with the carpetbaggers on. A remarkably sympathetic film, considering it came out of Hollywood, but that's back in the 1930s, obviously quite different. But it shows what the Southerners were up against and why it was necessary to try and protect themselves while they were being targeted by ruthless carpetbaggers. Yankees came to the South and riled up the folks and caused nothing but grief. But anyway, the point is you can be sure what the main narrative being given to us these days is bound to be out of context, dishonest or incomplete at the very best. It's wise to question whatever we're told. Always good to question what one's told. So, you know, the question is, what's the first question we ask of the four questions for simple tools for brain surgery?
What do you mean by?
How do you know?
And then so what?
Yes.
And then what if you're wrong
and
you die?
There we go. And I mean this so often, just how do you know? 6 billion years ago, how do you know it was 6 billion years ago? So, anyway, good. Any other questions, comments?
I just want to question. I should probably know this, but it seemed like they always were carrying the burning cross or were gathering around the burning cross. What was that? I don't know, is that symbolic or something, or is that? I was just curious.
I am not sure when that practice began.
Okay.
It seems strange. It doesn't seem what Christians would do normally.
No.
Now, I heard people say it's a cross lighting ceremony, but burning a cross doesn't seem like something an average Christian would do. That's my immediate assumption. It's part of the discrediting of the original intention of the organization by other elements that come in. Just like I know, because I heard from General Tini Groenevold directly, the AWB, even their symbol itself, you know, the black 3-7s on a white circle in the red flag, it was designed by the Southern government. The National Party said, this is what you need to do, opposition. Afrikaanse Weerstand Beweging, the Afrikaans Resistance Movement, and so get a security policeman to start up this organization. It was an active measures deception operation by the National Party government to portray themselves as more moderate by saying, look at the extreme opposition we're against. But they set up the opposition also to attract the people who opposed what they were doing as they start to sell out the country, that they could say, you know, well, here's this opposition party, and all the opponents of the government policy flock to them, to their man, who immediately are being betrayed. And it's just brilliant, just like what Lenin did, setting up all his opposition parties throughout the whole of Europe, so that he not only got the funding from the monarchists and the counter-revolutionaries, but he got to know their plans. So this is what happens. And in America, I would think anybody in America who joins some anti-government organization should know he's probably joining a group that's been set up by the FBI or the CIA or the NSA or one of the other alphabet soup organizations out there. You've got to be so careful. It's very easy. And on social media, it's even easier. The amount of people who are trolls or they set up some false thing or they're trying to provoke you to saying something that they can then use to either get you shut down, deplatformed or discredited. There's a lot of that goes on. It's a dirty war. The KGB were past masters of it. But I think that the CIA has now learned from the KGB and are following the old KGB methods, sadly to say. Not to mention what the British MI6 did. By the way, just on the active measure side, do I have this book easily on hand? We've got somewhere here, I must have the, maybe I don't have it. There's the man who was the head of Rhodesia's intelligence, Ken Flower. Ken Flower was the head of the Central Intelligence Organization Rhodesia, CIO. Ken Flower, it turned out after the war, was working for the British MI6. And the reason why Rhodesia was betrayed throughout, and Ian Smith worked this out afterwards, that Ken Flower, his intelligence chief, was actually working for the enemy. Rhodesia was being betrayed from within. I mean, imagine that. And sorry to say, but let's use the example of Donald Trump. Donald Trump was too trusting. He came to power as president with a very big and good agenda, drain the swamp and so on. But he didn't fire the Democrat-appointed heads of the FBI and the CIA, believing they would be professionals who had followed directives of the White House. Meanwhile, they were working to undermine him from the beginning, and the evidence is out there. The FBI and the CIA worked to undermine the President of the United States, Donald Trump, from the first day he came to office, and even before.
Plus, he did not fire the head of the CDC, did he?
Oh, he must forget that. This is, now, for example, I like Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump to a large extent. As far as American presidents go, they're the best presidents of America in my lifetime. But both of them I would critique. They didn't fire enough people. They should have fired virtually everybody. They should have done what Elon Musk done to Twitter. I mean, fire them all. Because the entire edifice of the swamp set up throughout Ronald Reagan's administration, the State Department was working against his interests from the beginning, as was the State Department, the FBI and the CIA under Trump. So if they could have just realized the treachery they were dealing with, they wouldn't have been so trusting. And I don't want to be too critical of them, and I'm sorry to say, much as I really like and respect Ian Smith, the greatest political leader that I've known in my lifetime, but he was too trusting. He was too trusting. I mean, he tolerated a man who he thought was a professional, head of Central Intelligence Organization, who was reporting back to British MI6. Pretty bad. In fact, General Walls, the head of combined operations of the Rhodesian Army, was called in by the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth's mother. She called him into Buckingham Palace and sat him down and basically talked him out of Rhodesia's plan B, which everyone knew was coming, that if Mugabe was going to win the elections, the Rhodesian army was going to do a coup and basically decapitate the whole leadership of Mugabe, seize power and prevent them doing so. And this plan was set, and I had General Walls explain to me, personally, 1990, he gave to me how the reason why at this Rhodesian celebration, a centenary celebration of 1,000 people, no one wanted to talk to him was because he was perceived as a traitor, because he's not welcome in the SAS club or almost any Rhodesian military group because he didn't give the order. And he admits he didn't give the order because the Queen Mother called him in and basically appealed to his patriotism to the British Crown to not implement this plan. They left nothing to chance. And they looked and they could see this person's weakness is this and that person's weakness is that. And they worked out. I mean, General Walls was incorruptible. They couldn't have, you know, offered him money to do this. But the royal family was used to appeal to him, and out of a sense of duty to the royal family, he didn't do what he was meant to do at the key moment and allowed Mugabe to seize power. So, I mean, there's things like this. You can just see they know how to get to different people. And there's more stories on how P.W. Botha was removed through poisoning at a key time that he suffered what they said was a stroke, but which his son-in-law, who was his bodyguard at the time, said was not a stroke. He was poisoned for sure. And knocked out the key time to bring in de Klerk because P.W. would not betray the country, but F.W. would. And so, just like Gates go out, move in, Harold Wilson. So this is the kind of vicious manipulation you see being played around the world. History is somewhat different from how most of us have been given it. There's a lot of wheeling and dealing behind the scenes. So anyway, if I hope just some of these ideas have, even if you don't remember it all, just understand there's a lot of devious nonsense going on behind the scenes. And normally the real story is quite different from what they're portraying.